guys. Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Yes, you are. Well, Jake, I have some bad news for you.
What?
It's not that you're you, if that's what you were just wondering.
I was like, yeah, I was like, I am. Yeah, I don't know why I needed that clarification.
Yeah, no. Have you looked at classic car prices lately?
They're like, I haven't really, but they're, aren't they softening?
They, it, like, so I was spending some time, like, I've heard, like, there's this, like, this kind of, like, this under, it's almost like the entire industry's skin is starting to crawl a little bit. Like, there's, like, little, like, the little arm prickles, like, little goosebumps are coming up, and, like, you're starting to see some more stuff for sale, and I kind of brokered a deal on a Targa. It was, like, a white Targa with a lobster red interior, and it went for, like, $30,000, which I felt like it was like a $45,000 car, but it went for 30, and he could have gotten more. I don't, it's just,
you're right, because I've seen a lot of things where I'm like, oh, that's a deal, like I need to hop on that.
Yes,
but yeah. I've seen a
but
few
I'm not
of them
sure
now
that you
which
should.
Means maybe it's not a deal.
Like, you're starting to see Recaro seats show up on Facebook Marketplace again. I feel like the hoarding is over a little bit. I don't know, it feels weird. My Mercedes, my Mercedes Overcrest Mercedes, which was basically mine, sold for like $6,500. Should have went for $7,500. Yeah. I mean, the wheels alone on the thing technically are about $1,500 wheels with the tires, and the car sold for $6,500.
Right.
Like, I'm like, what? And it's cool color. It's a nice car. I don't know. I feel like
you're
the
right.
Entire,
I have seen things have been like
there's
slowing
locally
down.
To here. There's a Honda Civics or a Honda CRX like an earlier one or something like that. And it's up for sale for like $3,000. And it's been up for sale since December. It's a cool car. It's got like a little hairball rust on it. Otherwise,
okay,
it's
so
a
it's
five
not like
speed.
A terrible, huh?
Yeah, there's all kinds of cars. You look around, things are starting like all of a sudden. I don't know, man. I feel
what,
like.
So what
things,
do you, what do you attribute it to? Like, what could be the cause of that?
Well, just like anything, you have markets, right? So you have you have this, I forget the term for it, but you have all this explosion of excitement, right? And it comes all and this is like any market does this. I don't care if it's stock market, I don't care if it's futures, I'm sorry, I don't care if it's futures markets, I don't care if it's like crops, grain, like everything, sugar, lithium, gold, anything. It's
those are
you get this
commodities.
Huge wave of excitement and exuberance, and people are crazy, comes all the way up to the top, and then people go, oh shit. And then the market goes way undervalued because then it's fear. You know, people have the fear that they're, oh my God, I'm in and I got to get out now. So then they start selling stuff and then it goes way undervalued. And then it comes back up somewhere to like a mean average. Right. And I feel like we're at like the top of the roller coaster. Like, you know, where it's like, ka-chink, 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 and then it stops doing the ka-chink, ka-chink sound and it goes, and it's like it starts to roll over the top of the hill at the top of the roller coaster. I feel like we're right there, man. If you're sitting in the back of the roller coaster, you're still going up. But if you're at the front seat of that roller coaster, you're looking down. Right?
Here's
you are looking down.
Yeah. Here's what's interesting, though, because I'm thinking of that Facebook example of the dude with the CRX.
Yeah.
Like with stock markets and everything else, prices are analyzed so closely and everyone has kind of their pulse on markets because you want to be like, it's very well, I'll say not regulated, but it's very well like leveled out, right? So even if the market is going crazy, everyone is on the same level there. With like individual marketplace sales of cars and guys that aren't watching the market and they're not watching Bring a Trailer or seeing what things are going for, I don't feel like everyone's on that same wavelength of like, oh, the market's going down, I'm gonna price this lower than I would have. Mm-hmm. So how do you think, like, is there a consensus, I guess, is my question? Or is it just like, well, it wasn't selling for 4,000, so I'm just going to lower the price. And the market now is just dictating that, like, yeah, no one is buying.
I honestly, dude, I don't know. I'm not sure. I have that creepy crawly feeling. This is the Civic right here.
It's 2,500 now.
It's $2,500 listed about a month ago. He's got video walkarounds of the thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a scam. I'm not sure, but there's a ton of
others. I mean, it could be too, that just, I don't know.
There's a ton of other stuff on Marketplace like that right now. There's wheels, seats, everything. It's the creepy crawly feeling. You know, you're always supposed to trust your intuition, right? Like if you're in a situation and you feel like you're about to get mugged, you're probably about to get mugged. And I feel like that's the classic car market right now. So I had to, I'm
purely
speculating.
There are, by the way, because you were referring to the phases of markets. I had to look it up quick. There's four phases to any market. The accumulation phase.
Yes,
the
we're way past phase, that. Everybody's accumulating. All you air-cooled 9/11 accumulators, prepare to be pillaged.
They've accumulated. Yes. Yep. Then there was the markup, obviously. This was like, wow, things are going crazy. Yep. Distribution. And then markdown. That's when things get marked back down. So we're like in distribution where sellers begin to, guess, like, get rid of things.
There's another stock chart that I think is worth.
Right. Yeah, that wasn't the one I was thinking of, but
it's the classic,
like the boom classic. And the whatever. Yeah,
classic chart, hype stocks chart. Here it is. All right, here we go. I'm gonna open this image up.
All right, let me see. What do we got?
Yeah, here we go. Sorry, this Riverside's not
like
exactly.
We're talking like boom and bust is kind of like the.
Yes. All right, here you go. So this is it.
There we go. That's it. Okay.
This is kind of like, you see the bottom here. This is where everybody, this is labeled stupid.
Trough of disillusionment.
So these are all the different stages, right? The stage one is like early adopter. That's like me, right? This is like 10, 12 years ago. I think I'm going to get a 9/11. It has nothing to do with the market for me.
Right.
But then stage two, everybody's like, oh, Chris got a 9/11.
No. Specifically. That's what affected the entire market of air-cooled cars.
Yeah, and then you've got stage three right here, which is basically everybody's getting in, right? Everybody's like, I got to have me one of those. And then the 9/11s were out of control. So then everybody bought a 944, and the 944s were out of control. And then pretty soon everybody's buying BMW 2002s. You know, so it's kind of like this trickle-down stage. And then I feel like we're like right in here, right above, right before stage four starts, right before that, the whole kit and caboodle comes down. And then you have the trough of disillusionment, like, oh, man, classic cars are dead. Nobody wants them anymore. And then, of course, everything just kind of comes back.
The slope of enlightenment. I love this.
Yeah. And then the plateau of productivity. Maybe that's where everybody starts to drive their cars again. Maybe we can only hope for that. So I'm basing all this on pure feel, right? I can feel it. I feel like we're about to get mugged. So I wanted to talk to an expert. So we've had Colin Comer from Colin's Classic Car, and he's going to come on and talk to us to a little bit about the market. He has been in this forever. If you remember him coming on the podcast a long time ago to talk about wheeling and dealing, he used to take semi-trailers around to small towns and then pull up and look in the newspaper ads for cars. This dude has been in the game for a long time. He's still hustling. Yeah. In fact, right now he's going to be coming on in about, we have the call in about 2 hours. Right now he's out with a trailer collecting cars.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So I want to talk to him about what he thinks is going on, if he senses anything, and he has to have been in downturns before, and what he does as a collector to deal with downturns. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because we haven't talked to him yet, I don't want you to lead him into this assumption. I want you to just play it as, what is the classic car market doing right now? Because it'd be interesting if he is also in concurrence where he's like, yeah, no, things appear to be softening, or people are talking about things softening, or if he's like, dude, it's great. Have you seen the market? It's great. So don't lead him. I want to know where he's actually at.
All right, let's take a look at his Instagram here together. I want to show you some of the cars that he's got. And this is, it's probably going to be like, you need to log in. I'm not going to do that, but we can look a little bit. It's Colin's Classic Auto. And, you know, he loves Shelby Plymouth Horizon.
The GLH.
The GLH. Omni GLH. Yeah, they had a Shelby one too, didn't they? Something.
That is the Shelby. Omni GLH. Yeah.
So these are some of the cars that he drives, like old Mustangs and stuff, and I think he has a NASCAR that he drives at Road America, and he's got a lot of cool cars, lots of experience. He's bought and sold, you name it. He has bought and sold
it. Saline Mustang.
Oh, look at this, a Cheetah. How Cobra. Bad do you want to drive a Cheetah?
Oh, yes.
All right. So we're going to bring him on, and you mentioned leading him. I sent him a text message. Let me see. I don't know. Let me see what I said just to give everybody context. I said, yo, do you want to hop on the horn for about 5 minutes to comment on the state of the collector car market and your thoughts? Podcast tomorrow afternoon if you're free. That's all I said.
Okay, good.
That's not a leading thing, right?
No. Yeah, I'm just very curious because, yep, like I said, this could be very localized, and it's just us seeing that things are softening in our contacts.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know what
he's
I mean?
Got, he's got an overall. Issue. He's got the scoop. All right. So here's
correct.
Yeah. Let's bring him on and talk to him. Here is Colin.
Cooling has always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price. With a rich history stretching over 7 decades, they provide the best high performance and OEM plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road today. From classic copper brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns, to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, and Audi and Porsche platforms, all the way up to new vehicles. Check out their expanding Classic Series lineup, and be sure to check them out at csfrace.com or on social media.
Colin, it is our pleasure to have you back on again. It's been a while, and now with your beaming face, how's it going?
Great. It has been a while. I thought you guys were dead.
Yeah, well, maybe, maybe. Jake's a lot closer to the ground than I am, so it's at least one of us is getting there.
Number three for the afternoon. Number three.
So what's new, man? What are you working on? What's going on?
Oh, you know, just same old stuff. Just working on race cars and sports cars and muscle cars and the like baseball cards, trading them in, trading them out, fixing stuff up, you know.
What are you working on for yourself? Like, what is your personal car that you're working on right now? What do you got going on?
I'm working on a 240Z right now.
Okay.
A Series 1 240Z that I picked up. My friend's dad bought it new, and I haven't had a Z car in a while, so it's kind of like a dog returning to its own vomit. I just decided I'm going to go back and get another Z car up and running.
Why is that a bad thing? Like, what is it about this car that's just is just not that's scaring you? That's making you say that?
Oh, the car is awesome. It's just like I had them years ago, and you remember when you start working on something, you remember like, oh yeah, that's a problem on these. Oh yeah, I better look at this, and then you refresh your memory about everything that was, a problem point, a friction point. So
yeah, you got to take off the rose colored glasses. I have this desire, like I want to do a Volkswagen Rabbit again. And I'm like all super romantic about it, doing a Mark I Volkswagen. And I have a feeling as soon as I get into it again, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, that's why the CIS is total shit. And it's going to be the same type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you feel me. And I've also somehow dove back into air cooled Porsches. So yeah, I restored every Shelby out there, so I'm out of room, so I don't have any more. I can't restore any more Cobras or GT350s because I ran out of parts. So now I'm like, I'll go back to Porsches, Datsuns.
How is that whole? Well, let's start with there because I want to ask you questions about the market. Now, you didn't hear the way we prefaced this up, so I'm trying not to like taint the conversation. How is you're really really tuned into the muscle car market? What's that like right now? How is that feeling? What's the vibe?
Well, my little subset of the muscle car market, I'm kind of like the Shelby Mustang guy and the high end, like super low production, rare stuff. So the car is ideal in our production numbers in the hundreds. So I don't really dig into the market at large of like, nothing, not there's anything wrong with it, but I won't, you know, it's not like a 350 powered 69 Camaro that they made 400,000 of. Like, I don't really do that. And I'm not really. So I follow it all, but in my little subsection, there's always good demand because the supply is so low. Mm-hmm. So, but I just came back from Barrett Jackson and watched, you know, a multitude of varying qualities and conditions and all that stuff of cars sell. So that's always a good barometer, as is Mecum, Kissimmee. I was just there watching, you know, 4,000 cars sell there over a week. So
what'd it feel like?
What did it feel like?
It's not like it hit you over the head or anything, but what was the feeling of it? Like the kind of the overall vibe, how was everybody feeling? Like, what was everybody exuberant? Was everybody tenuous? Was sales great? Were people complaining things weren't meet and reserve? Was everything meet and reserve? That kind of thing. Like, how did it all feel?
Well, the sell-through rate is what you kind of judge an auction by. So Mecum had like spectacular cars, like a really good roster of cars. I think the inventory at Mecum in Florida far exceeded that of what was on the ground in Arizona, just from my perspective of rare, low production, you know, super good, higher dollar cars. But the sell-through rate, I mean, we were seeing a couple years there, the COVID boom of, you know, 90, 95% sell-through rates. Obviously, Barrett Jackson is 100% no reserve, so they aim for 100% sell-through rate.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, something didn't go right. Sure. But I think Mecum was, you know, in the 70-ish percent sell-through, which is really good. You know, pre-COVID, you didn't see those numbers. But yeah, stuff was selling. Things are adjusting. So, like, you have to look at, you know, the sellers have to be willing to take the new money. They can't. It's like you buy a good stock and you buy it for $12 a share and it goes to $90 a share, but you don't sell it. And you wait until it goes to $70 a share and then you sell it and you go, oh man, I lost $22 a share. No, yep. You still made money. You just didn't make that extra $22 a share.
Never make money. You don't lose money and you don't make money until you sold it.
Exactly. So a friend of mine always used to say that you make money when you buy a car. I never understood that until I started like buying cars and then you sell them. And you go, oh yeah, okay, that was a good buy. You know, so he was right. You don't make the money when you sell it. Unrealized gains are what a lot of people get hung up on. You know, like, oh, my, you know, whatever, my Camaro was worth $200,000 last year. Now I got $140,000. I lost all that money. But they bought it for $22,000 in 1995. So I guess in a nutshell, if the people are realistic when they're selling and the buyers are realistic about what they're paying, that's where we're seeing a lot of vibrancy. You know, a lot of these guys go to the auction. They're just happy that it's still selling for good money. And the buyers are happy to get a car that last year they couldn't have bought for the same money. So it's backed off a little bit.
I instructed Chris not to lead your answers here, but our conversation leading into this was, you know, at least in our circles, we've noticed that the car market, the used car market in general, is softening, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's I guess what we wanted clarification on. Is that just kind of a microcosm that we're seeing in our circles, or is there across the board, you know, used classic electric cars, etc., softening from where it was?
I think across the board, yes, everything's off. Now, why is everything off? Number one, we put everybody into a cage for a while back in 2020, and then they weren't spending money eating out and they weren't spending money traveling. And then we unlocked the cage and we ran away, like, you know, we're letting loose this caged animal. And what did the cage animals do? They went and bought stuff. They're like, man, I realized when I was locked up that I really wanted to have a Porsche. And they ran out and bought a Porsche. And all their friends wanted to as well. So we had this really weird, perfect storm of all of a sudden people had extra cash and they thought they might die. And then they didn't die. And they wanted to go live life. So that was a tremendous uptick in the market. So when stuff goes up 200 or 300%, you know, there's some principle out there in the universe about what goes up must come down or something like that. I don't know. I heard something about it. But so you can't expect that like something's going to multiply 2X, 3X, 5X and stay there. So it backs off, again, the stock, you know, scenario here. If it backs off to 200% more than it was in 2019, it's still a good market, but it's not as strong as it was. So and the other thing you kind of look at is a lot of people got priced out of the market and those people are coming back in because they thought the ship had sailed and now they see it returning to port and they're like, hey, I can still get on the ship. So yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have a correction in the market, that's just unhealthy for it. You know, when everybody starts getting priced out, people start getting bitter and negative and everybody loses enthusiasm. That's no good. So I'm happy to see a correction. You know, most of the stuff I have is either my 911, which is worth, you know, I paid $20,000 for it. So that was a good buy. Everything else is just a pile of shit. Like this thing was $1,500, this old Mercedes that just eats me alive. And, you know, I've got a Trooper that, you know, is probably worth more than I paid for it. But I'd like to see prices come down. I'd like to see more people be able to get into some of these older cars. When you see things like an E30 BMW, which is they made thousands and thousands and thousands of these things going for like $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, you just kind of start scratching your head and go, well, who's going to be buying it at this price and what are they doing with the car?
Yeah, I just had a conversation with a friend of mine today about his collection of Hondas and Acuras. And he said, hey, is my Integra Type R that I thought was worth $125,000 last year. What's it worth now? And I said, well, it's worth less. I said, well, why? I said, because the stuff's come down a little bit. It's not worth the $40,000 that it was 5 or 6 years ago, but it's not worth what it was last year. So, but overall, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not harping on it, but air-cooled Porsches, you're familiar with it. Why is every G-body Porsche Carrera out there, or even 964s, well, let me rephrase that. 964s are worth a lot of money because they're being modified into standard design.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, G-body cars, I met you and you photographed one that I was selling.
Yep.
And I thought it was like, I got a world record price at 35 grand. That car would be 100 and something thousand today for over 100,000 mile car. And they made thousands and thousands of them. So we need a correction to bring a little sanity back to a lot of areas.
Yeah. So is this something that, you know, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. We talked a long time ago about you buying cars out of newspapers and stuff like that. So you've kind of ridden the waves. You know, how does in your business, or a guy that, I mean, you do a lot higher volume than like just the regular guy, but let's say there's a guy that likes to flip cars here and there. He likes to buy things. How do you weather this? Like, let's say you bought your 911 last year and you're basically, you bought high. How do you weather some of this stuff? Because you obviously, you had to stay in business. So you're still buying and selling cars. How do you weather the downturns and kind of the ups and downs of this and still feel okay?
Well, you're not on the Titanic, so you are not required to go down with the ship. If you have something that's it's a depreciating asset, if you realize, hey, I paid too much for this, the market's changing, you know, the wind shifted and this is going down, take your lump, take, you know, you bought a car for 80 grand, it's worth 65,000 right now. Take the 65,000, go buy something else that's going the other way. Or, you know, don't be prideful and, you know, fly it right into the ground. And like, you know, you gotta, at some point you have to realize, you know, there's ups and downs. Just like you said, sometimes you make a good play, sometimes you make a bad play. The smart guy, I mean, look at Sam Walton. He'd spend millions of dollars building a store. He'd look at it for a little while, and if it was a loser, he'd shut it down and, you know, board up the windows and move on, go to another town.
Yep. Is there any cars that you think, like, if you had to pick something that you would just, let's say that we don't know what the car that's being sold is. You bought a car for 80, it's worth 65. Who cares what it is? Let's say you sold it, you got that 65. What is Colin looking at right now? At 65 or 50 grand, kind of in that, you know, lower collector car tier, that you think is going to be something that'll be great?
You know, that's a tough question, because if I knew, I'd go buy them all. But I think the generational shift that we're kind of a part of right now, I think you just trend newer. So if guys like us like stuff from the 70s, you know, early 80s, I mean, I really like, you know, you look at, you know, I was harping Fox Body Mustangs for so long. You know, got to buy a Fox Body Mustang. Well, they've kind of gone up. So, you know, maybe you look at, you know, something that hasn't gotten a lot of love, but it's kind of special. I still think you can't go wrong buying a CRX SI or some, you know, cool Volkswagen that, you know.
Like Ginster yellow VR6 GTI from like 1997. Like the yellow one with with a VR6 and like kind of like, or the blue, they had a, I don't know what color blue it is, like oceanic blue or something like that. But like every single one of those cars is gone, crushed, rusted, or fucked up by a kid. If you can find a stock GTI VR6, man, I think those things are going to go crazy. Also like the, in terms of the Volkswagen world, like a 20th anniversary edition Mark IV. I think is going to be something, or like the 337 that they made not very many of, because all those cars got screwed up, but they all came in like cool colors, and the 337, which is super rare, they all got fucked up. So I think those are anything like that. I mean, that the same thing kind of applies to like maybe some of the newer import stuff too. I think there's a big chance
in the Volkswagen world. I think we all need to go buy 6-speed all track wagons because I do not know what happened there. Because we were going to buy a new all-track wagon for my wife in whenever Dieselgate was, and they took back her Jetta Sport wagon. We were going to buy an all-track wagon, and the dealer was like, please buy this. We'll give you $10,000 off sticker, and the sticker was like $32,000. And
yeah,
I was like, I don't know. And now, I mean, I've seen a couple sell in the 30s and 40s.
I know. Like, we had one. We legit had that car.
Really?
That same exact thing happened to us. And then my wife got hit on the freeway, and like, you know, the car got fixed, but it was like I don't know, not really. You could look at it and go, wow, that looks like it's not straight anymore. And I just couldn't do it. So then we ended up with a Golf R and we paid whatever we paid for it. And it's still, we put 60,000 miles on it and it's still worth pretty much what we paid for it at the time. But man, those Alltrax, they're pretty cool. They're a cool car.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so to answer your question, I think the other thing is, like, look at Boxsters, like first gen Boxsters. That's a lot of car for the money. They cannot get any cheaper.
Just talking about this.
It's still, yeah. It will never not be a hairdresser's car. It never won't be. But
I don't think
that's true.
I don't see a hairdresser anymore. So, like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what a hairdresser would drive. So
I'm with you. That's why I'm wearing a hat. I'm a hat for life. Where do you find your deals now as a dealer? Are you looking on Facebook Marketplace? Are you going to the auction? Where are you looking?
Well, I certainly don't find them on online auctions. You know, I go to sell stuff there. So I don't buy a lot of Facebook Marketplace. Yeah, every once in a while you see something. It's still, I'm an old man, so I can say I still look at eBay Motors. But, you know, more it's word of mouth. Cars and Coffee, car show, local car club. You know, you go to the, you know, whatever. You go to the Porsche club, you go to the Audi club, you go to their annual banquet, you go to their, you know, swap meet in the winter, you go to, you know, any kind of Cars and Coffee thing, Radwood, you walk around, you'll find somebody that has a cool car. And if you like it, you know, it's a sweet car, even if it's not for sale, it doesn't hurt to talk to somebody, because you never know, you put a bug in somebody's ear and say, if you ever think of selling this, 7 times out of 10, those people will call you within a week.
Yeah.
Because they absolutely start thinking, they start looking around going, well, if I had that money, I could buy this. And yep, it's an evil thing that suggests to somebody they could sell their car.
Absolutely. That's called, you know, buying cars sideways, right? They were never officially for sale. I always thought you could call up or stop by all the classic car shops too. Like, you drive over to Bob's Mini Repair. Hey, Bob, you know, is there anybody like sick of their car that you know of? Is there anybody that's looking to sell something? Do you have anything in the shop that the guy just hasn't paid you to work on yet? And that seems like a pretty good way to buy cars too, or at least he knows all the cars around that you can sometimes get pointed in the right direction.
You know who knows where all the cars are and the best people to talk to? I'm giving away all my trade secrets on because I must be thinking of retirement or something, but the transporters, the guy who drives the transport truck, the guy who goes in and out of every car auction, hauls cars around the country, you talk to that guy and you say, hey, have you ever seen anybody had a Shelby Mustang? You know, where did you deliver that car? Where did this car come from? Or they show up at my shop and they have a bunch of cars in the trailer or something I like. Say, hey, where's that going? You know,
yeah.
You chat them up and every once in a while it's like, hey, yeah, it's going to Bob Smith. Here's his phone number.
Oh, that's insane. Yeah, that's crazy. So then you call up Bob Smith and be like, hey, what'd you pay for it? Do you want to make like $5,000 right now? And then just wire him the money. And the dude just made $5,000. You got a car. It never even got to Bob Smith.
Right. They just leave the car at your shop or your house and it's done. So, but yeah, I think there's some stuff, if it, like a higher price point, look at stuff that went up and it came down. Because if you're looking, again, I don't understand why people, human nature is you always buy at a peak. Like, oh my gosh, those cars are worth so much. I better get one now. It's like, FOMO. No, I want to get the car where it was worth so much. And it's taking a breather and it's in a little correction, like a downturn. Like, let's say you like Testarossas. I think Testarossas are a pivotal car for Ferrari. And I think for the whole Radwood era and all that stuff, I mean, it's a flat 12. They're, 180 mile an hour car. They went from nothing to almost $200,000. And now they're back around $100,000. You look for the right one and just look for the right deal, the right car. And I don't see where you could go wrong with that, because guys our age, and I'm looping you into, you know, I'm using wide strokes here. This is a big brush I'm painting with, but yeah. You know, there's an era, there's a generation of people that are hitting peak earning years that were going to go, you know what? A Countach is miserable to drive. And of that era, the other car, the substitute is the TR. And they're actually nice to drive and they're fast. And for $100,000, what do you get?
For sure. I think people are, to answer your question, I think people are really risk averse. I think they get really scared of being wrong or making a mistake. And they also feel like losing out at the top end is also a mistake. Yep. They're both mistakes. They both feel like they're making a mistake if they do something or don't do something.
And that's where I think perhaps we're seeing this a little bit, is live auctions are struggling slightly because the herd of buyers has become so conditioned over this short period of time where online auctions have become a real thing. Like, let's say Brand Trailer, because they're the preeminent online auction. So people on Brand Trailer have become so accustomed to reading 300 comments to make sure that they're not making a mistake and that everybody agrees with their decision. They go to a live auction and they sit there in a chair by themselves, and they don't have any, they don't have 300 people to query that if, what do you think? Is the IMS bearing good? They don't know. And they're afraid to bid. So it's really a weird phenomenon. Like this herd mentality is all of a sudden taken over in the car market. So I think that's swaying people a little bit. It helps sell cars online. It gives people a comfort level. And to your point, people don't want to make a mistake. Nobody wants to be, you know, if you don't know who the fish is, it's you. So nobody wants to be the fish. So, you know, they don't want to, they like to go online and wait until the seventh day of an auction and read all the comments and go, okay, all these guys have asked all the questions I should ask and it seems good and I'm going to bid.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's where some of that Bring a Trailer premium comes from, is that mentality. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Well, it's great for entertainment. But it's all great for helping crowdsource. It's a game show where you have unlimited phone a friend points.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's not an analogy. Yeah, I don't know. I think you should only have one phone a friend. I think you should have a phone a friend at a live auction. That's all that should be. Right. Colin, thank you for coming to talk about the market. I really appreciate you hanging out.
So Colin, give out your phone number now so that you can be that one phone a friend for everyone listening.
Yeah, yes. It's 555-1PM2.
Yeah, exactly. We will link Colin's Instagram in the show notes if you want to see what he's up to and, you know, kind of follow along with any cars that he's got for sale. Always has cool stuff. Hey, do I want an Omni? Do I want one of those?
Yeah.
I do?
Yeah.
Shelby
GLH.
I'm
working on a GLHS right now because every time I don't have one, I jones for it. So, yes, you totally want a 200-horsepower front-wheel drive Rabbit.
Yeah, that's kind of seems like that's what it would be. Like a 1.8 T swap Rabbit is what it is, essentially.
But yeah, except it's a 2.2 liter turbo leg.
Yeah, that would be fun. I want to try as many new things as possible.
Yeah, well, come drive mine and then you can decide if you want. Maybe you just want to buy half of mine and then we'll share it.
All right, sounds good, man. Well, it can live at your place and then I'll buy 10% of it and I can just drive it every time I come down there.
That's free. You can drive it anytime.
I appreciate it, man. We'll see you this summer, I am sure.
Yeah. All right. See you guys. Thanks again.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Take it easy.
All right. Many thanks to Colin to come on and talk to us about all this stuff. It's super interesting. What have you got for us before we get into news?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, if you want to follow, go check out Colin. Link in the show notes. You can go check out his Instagram, see what he's up to. Great dude. Seriously, a great dude that's always made time for me, even though he doesn't have to. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's take a minute to talk about Petrolbox, which is a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast, the car girl, car guy in your life. Each month, they carefully select items, including tools, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, publications, hats, t-shirts, all the latest and greatest. You got pins, you got stickers. It's a curated selection of latest and greatest gear in the industry. There's two different levels of the subscription to choose from. You got the Petrobox Basic, which costs
less. Is this coffee safe? It's from yesterday. You think?
It won't be warm. I know. I wouldn't like that at all.
Continue.
I paused for dramatic effect in case you like spit it directly into the camera or something.
No, it's just tastes
two,
like
two different That's levels just... of Petrobox. Petrobox is always safe, by the way. Will not taste like cold, disgusting coffee because it's always great. You got the Petrobox Basic for less than $20 a month and the Petrobox Premium, which gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check those guys out at mypetrobox.com. You can also use the code Overcrest at checkout to get a deal.
All right, you want to see this video? I want to show you a clip. Are you ready?
What is this video?
Jesus Christ. All right,
wow. Okay, so if you weren't watching the video, that was a Rivian truck plowing through
an Armco and a concrete barrier.
And the concrete barrier. Wow.
That was a 60-mile-an-hour crash.
Why were they doing that? Like, what?
Just testing. They're just testing to see what things happen. Because the weight of things is getting so absurd.
Oh, I suppose. Because that thing weighs a ton.
Yeah. Concerns about the increasing weight of modern vehicles have become prominent, initially fueled by the popularity of large SUVs and exacerbated by the heavy battery packs in modern electric vehicles. You know those videos where someone drives into a convenience store on accident?
Yeah.
That's going to be really bad when it's like a Rivian.
Yeah, they're going to go through the convenience store and then whatever is the next building over.
In a crash test, a Rivian R1T pickup weighing around 7,000 pounds was driven towards a guardrail at 60 miles an hour. Surprisingly, the researchers... Dude, did you see the video? Like, the camera's aimed over here, like, at the Armco? Like, the Armco is going to stop it. No, blast right through the Armco. Right off the frame. Gone. The findings indicate that the weight concern extends beyond EVs, emphasizing the need to address potential safety issues associated with larger and heavier vehicles, both electric and gas-powered. The test highlights the urgency of addressing this issue. Blah, 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 blah. What I thought was interesting is that the Army is super worried about this because basically these things will run through like barriers. They will run through barriers. Like if you strapped a bomb into the back of, hopefully nobody does this. Hey, remember when Overcrest said you could put a bomb in the back of a Rivian and drive it into the Supreme Court?
They didn't.
Yeah. It's just these things.
Your
seem
point is,
dangerous.
Yeah, it's just, it's like a semi truck. Like they just weigh that much that there's just a ton of inertia.
It is critical to conduct these EV baseline comparison tests to understand a potential risk for our nation, said Genevieve Pizzola, a civil engineer researcher at the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center. Boy, that sounds like a total boondoggle. The work is the first necessary step towards ensuring our nation's protective measures, such as roadside barrier systems and barriers to protect against hostile vehicles. While the solution for the military may be relatively simple, just make the barrier stronger. For highway designers, it will take a little more careful consideration. A barrier that's strong enough to catch a 7,000-pound EV must also be deformable enough to not destroy a 2,500-pound internal combustion compact car. We didn't know as much as we can because it takes time to design new systems. What do you mean?
I suppose that is, it's a balance, right? Because you don't want just an absolute unmovable brick wall for Armco everywhere because it's supposed to absorb some of the impact so that you don't just stop, right?
Correct.
So I guess that is difficult.
The question is there's a serious disparity right now in vehicle size and weight.
Absolutely there is.
Like I think the Golf weighs 3,000 pounds, 3,200 pounds, our Golf R, or 3,400 pounds.
Okay.
That's half the weight of this Rivian. Half. It is two of those. My 911 weighs 2,500 pounds, about.
Yes.
This is almost three of my imagine God hurling three 911s at you while you're driving around with your kid. I everything's getting so much bigger. There was this test done where people were like sitting in their car, like a lady that, or you, someone that's like shorter, smaller, was sitting in a truck looking over the steering wheel with a 6-year-old standing, you know, like at the crosswalk.
Couldn't even see him.
You couldn't, they were in the crosswalk and you were stopped at the stop sign where you're supposed to be stopped. They couldn't see the kid over the hood. So
my question is,
what do we do? Like, what do we do to like reel this? We can't reel it back in. We can't do like a Clash for Clunkers thing where everybody buys back anything over 7,000 pounds.
I think hopefully what I would like to see is that there's just a change in what people want to drive. And maybe we're seeing a little bit already that people like the SUVs, hopefully like, I don't need a giant 3-row SUV for everything. Maybe I want,
when
just
you
a
lived
smaller
in Woodbury, did you believe
car.
that shift was happening at any point?
No, not at all.
Not at all happening. I don't know what the answer is. I truly don't. I have no idea, but nothing will change. We'll just accept that. Nothing's going to change in this. We'll slowly evolve into everything being basically oil tankers driving around. and just plowing so
it reminded me watching that barrier video and like how are we going to stop these things. Have you seen the videos of like the retractable bollards, you know, where it'll come up and it'll just stop a semi though, and like the motor just keeps going like 500 feet because it just stops it.
Those are solid steel bollards. Those are pretty serious.
Those are really cool.
Not really good for the passenger or the driver.
Correct. That's what I was talking about.
If the engine keeps going, imagine what your body's doing. Isn't most death in a car not because of like blunt force? Doesn't your heart like rip away from your
a lot of your organs? Your organs need to slow down.
You're just a bag of, like, if you took like a bunch of chicken gizzards and put it in a Ziploc bag and threw it against the wall, that's basically what the inside of your body's doing.
I mean, I guess here, just because I found this, I'm gonna watch it.
What do you got here?
This is just what I was talking about, these like movable bollards.
Oh my god. The whole payload of the truck comes out of there. Good grief.
Just stops it and the whole cab just keeps going.
Wow. All right, let's keep going.
So that's a 7.5-ton truck. So like, I mean, we can stop these things.
14,000 pounds. Yeah, but you can't have that on the side of a road next to a cliff.
No, you really can't. No.
You're going to run into the bollard and you're going to get thrown 4,000 feet down a cliff into a bunch of trees to your doom.
Not ideal.
Formula One has denied Mario Andretti's team bid. Denied.
Okay. Why? I remember this because he was going to be with Cadillac, right?
Yeah. It was going to be awesome. In a recent development, Formula One authorities have declined Andretti's bid to become the 11th team in the championship. Now, we talked about all the logistics and everything it takes to be, you have to give a certain amount of money, you got to buy in, you got to prove your competency, all these different things. The rejection comes shortly after images of the team's wind tunnel model surfaced online. CEO Stefano Domenicali, along with F1 management, firmly shut the door on Andretti's aspirations. According to a statement from the F1 organization, their evaluation process determined that an 11th team would not add value to the championship on its own. The statement read, "The most significant way in which a new entrant would bring value is by being competitive. We do not believe that Andretti would be a competitive participant."
Really?
The assessment continued to criticize Andretti's proposal as a novice constructor, intending to design and build a car under the 2025 regulations, and then, in the following year, developed an entirely different car under the 2026 regulations. F1 management expressed doubt about the feasibility of new entrant building two distinct cars in its first 2 years, questioning Andretti's understanding of the challenge. Wow.
Here's the thing, though.
You American, you don't get it. Just get over
there. Why not? What is the danger in, like, why not let him try like that?
Because we don't think this is like so protected, man. This is so like this snow globe of Formula One. No. However, there may be a glimmer of hope for Andretti. Although the team cannot join the grid in 2025, as it would have required purchasing an engine from a competitor, F1 authorities have hinted the possibility of accepting an entry in 2028, which aligns with the time frame when Cadillac General Motors power unit is expected to be ready.
Okay, so maybe just pushing it off.
It's not never, but it ain't now. Is kind of
wow.
Another Formula One news, in case you didn't hear, which was like splattered all over my social media, Lewis Hamilton has left Mercedes for Ferrari.
Yes.
Lewis Hamilton, a cornerstone of Mercedes' success. Dude, I don't know, man. We'll see. We'll see.
What?
He's good, but it's the car. It's always the car. I mean, these drivers are amazing, right? They're amazing. And Lewis Hamilton is an insane driver. But let's be honest, it's the car. Because, like,
it'll
the
be
second driver for Mercedes, whoever it's been over the course of years, has always also done really, really good.
Yeah, you're right.
Toto Wolff, the team principal and CEO, shared. There's so many Lewis Hamilton fans out there that are like, fucking. Toto Wolff, the team principal and CEO, shared the development, acknowledging the success achieved with Hamilton, but recognized the natural conclusion of their partnership. Hamilton, who has been on Mercedes since 2013, emphasized the difficulty of the decision to leave the team, saying, quote, "I want to fly around in my jet, polluting the earth, and then telling everyone that they need to be environmentally conscious."
Yes. Yeah, he did do that, didn't he?
"I've had an amazing 11 years with this team, and I'm so proud of what we have achieved together. Mercedes has been a part of my life since I was 13 years old. It's a place where I have grown up. So making the decision to leave was one of the hardest I've ever had to make. But the time is right for me to take this step, and I'm excited to be taking on a new challenge. I will be forever grateful for the incredible support of my Mercedes family, blah, blah, blah. I'm 100% committed to delivering the best performance I can this season and making my last year with Silver Arrows one to remember. I just think about
this.
I'm out of here later. It's like, are you still going to drive for Mercedes for a year after saying you're going to leave? It's like, it's almost like a lame duck driver. Like you have a lame duck president, you know, you're leaving. So,
It's like anyone that gives their 2 week notice, you're like, okay, we can't count on them to be productive for the next 2 weeks. Right. That's exactly what's happening here. I don't know.
Sounds like Carlos Sainz is who he's replacing, which sucks because I liked him. And Carlos Sainz is just going to go somewhere.
This is going to make some good TV for the Netflix series, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, regular F1 puts me to sleep, so I'll be excited for that drama.
I know. Like, I don't watch the races, but we do watch the
Drive to Survive. Yeah.
The Drive to Survive. Yes. The Survive to Drive. I don't know.
Survive to Drive. Yeah. Carlos is going to end up somewhere. I mean, he podiumed a few times, placed like fourth, fifth, sixth, first, second, first, whatever. He did pretty good. So we'll see where he ends up. Always lots of drama with the shakeups over at Formula One.
Absolutely. Also a lot of drama coming from who else? Tesla, the EV manufacturer.
Yep.
So we've heard plenty of reviews of the Tesla Cybertruck and all of its capabilities and features. Well, it seems like many owners are encountering a feature that is, quote, coming soon. One that is especially frustrating when it's so fundamental and basic to a truck's touted performance. A screenshot posted online by owner Voyager ATX shows the coming soon message when attempting to engage the front and rear locking differentials.
What?
The result, shown in the owner's YouTube video, shows the truck absolutely failing at driving in the mud, losing out to a lowly Subaru Crosstrek for comparison.
Oh, no. The Crosstrek is such a boring car.
It is, but guess what? It has four-wheel drive that works.
Yeah, well, Subaru knows what they're doing there.
Much better.
Yeah.
Now, over-the-air updates are nothing new to Tesla, nor are the broken promises of features yet to be enabled. But keep in mind that Cybertruck prototypes and all of the marketing flaunted locking differentials during testing, and like its prowess at like going off-road and rock crawling.
To be fair to Tesla, locking differentials in this type of technology is relatively new.
Yeah. I mean, it's not...
It's not new. It's been around since forever. It is new in the sense
that it's not actually a locking differential, Chris, because the fact that it's going to be an over-the-air update means that all it is electronics, software, quote, locking or spinning the wheels the same, right? But, you know, for those that don't know, a locking differential is, like, absolutely paramount when doing anything off-road. You know, it basically ensures that both wheels on an axle spin together and you don't just have all the power going to one wheel.
You're essentially doubling the amount of traction you have.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, the dual motor Cybertrucks are expected to have both front and rear locking diffs, while the tri-motor needs one up front since the back wheels, quote, do their own thing. But again, you would still need some sort of like traction control or automated lockers.
Yeah, that's software, yeah.
To do that. So, while Tesla says the feature is still playing hide and seek when it comes to customer deliveries, the lead engineer emphasized the driver's skill in off-road prowess, but the coming soon tag leaves owners in suspense. Some owners are sharing the same coming soon message. This isn't an isolated incident, sparking Lighthunter banner about trading features or even the potential for locking differentials to become a subscription service.
They're not going
to
do that.
I don't know. BMW is wanting to do that with heated seats. Like, come on.
No word
from Tesla on the issue, but it seems the functionality isn't quite ready for prime time, casting another slight shadow on the eagerly awaited vehicle launch.
All right. We've got Hertz right here. Hertz is selling all their cars.
I thought Hertz had already sold off like all their cars.
Yeah, they announced, well, they're for sale right now. So I went and looked what they actually
are. They're selling their EV fleet.
Yeah, so Model 3.
No one wants them.
Just for perspective on cost, like where things have gone. In 2018, a Model 3 was $66,000.
Yeah, I remember they were cheap.
$42,000.
Okay.
20,000. It's a 50% have you ever any model dropped by?
No. And this is new. Like this is new. A new, this is new pricing. Model 3.
Model Y started at in 2019 at 55 and saw a gradual increase to 68 by 2022 down to 48. That's another $20,000 decrease, which is, I mean, their stock is absolutely getting like monkey hammered. It's just getting absolutely destroyed.
What is monkey hammer, Chris?
It's just like the little like Donkey Kong guy.
Monkey hammer.
Yeah, just getting absolutely pummeled. It's lower than whale shit right now. So anyway, so you can go on Hertz and you can get a Model 3 base for 25 or a Model Y for 32. So if you want an EV that's been beat within an inch of its life, 25 grand for a Model 3. And they're certified. Hertz certifies these cars.
That's actually like interesting.
It's pretty cheap. A Model Y for 32 is, I mean, if I wanted a Tesla, that's what I'd be doing. Problem is they're all, well, I guess that none of them are interesting colors, but it seems like they're all white, like white or black.
I wouldn't doubt that.
All right. Thanks to emissions in Europe, the Mustang has turned into a mare. Did you see what I did there?
I do. I didn't like
navigating the intricate web of European emissions regulations. Car manufacturers have found themselves making strategic adjustments to comply with the ever-changing environmental landscape. In this complex scenario, the Ford Mustang stands out as a unique player, refusing to conform to prevailing trends. So basically what's happened here is because it's being sold in Europe and they still want to have the V8, the once potent 480 horsepower engine is now detuned to 440 horsepower.
So just to meet CO2 emissions.
Yeah.
But does that mean, is that going to be throughout, like globally, they're just detuning it?
No, that's just
it?
Europe. No, they'll just chip it. It's just got different software.
Right. Yeah.
Which I would think that if you were in Europe, you'd make a killing doing chip tuning. Just like.
Exactly. I was going to say, like, all you have to do is just, chip it.
Except for they just sent that one guy to jail for the diesel guy that was like chip tuning the diesels. Oh. Like George or whatever his name was. He went to jail for 3 years, got $1.3 million in penalties to the EPA. And then I think there was like another $2 million in tax fees.
Was this, well, this was a manufacturer, right?
That's no, this was a guy selling chip tuning. Really? Yeah, he would chip tune your diesel, your truck. And because it violated EPA standards, he got 3 years in jail and $1.3 million in penalties to the EPA.
Wow.
So you know what else gets you 3 to 5 years in prison, Jake?
Tell me.
Drug trafficking. Tuning a car worse than selling crack cocaine.
Yes,
aggravated 100%. Assault. Tuning a car as bad as assaulting someone. Burglary.
That is so dumb.
Tuning a car as bad as breaking, entering, and stealing. Robbery. Tuning a car as bad as mugging someone and taking their purse. Weapons offenses. Carrying a gun without a permit. Worse than tuning a car. Kidnapping. Have you kidnapped anyone lately, Jake?
I have not.
He said, well, it's just as bad as tuning a car.
Apparently.
Sexual assault. Not even going to go there, but some sex crimes only get you 3 to 5 years in prison,
really?
Which is the same as tuning a car. Accidentally kill someone lately, Jake?
I've not.
3 to 5 years in prison. Same penalty as tuning a car. Just in case you were wondering, this guy got 3 years in prison for chip tuning diesel trucks and $1.3 million in fines.
So was he the manufacturer of the chips?
He's just the software guy. Remember when we talked to O34 about chip tuning and they were like, hey, our stuff is compliant. We are compliant. Yeah. We are compliant. We are compliant.
Right. Which is
we
crazy.
We are compliant. Which, I mean, it was like a broken record.
Well, no, this, look
what happened to this poor fucking guy. Yeah. I mean, maybe the guy was an absolute douchebag and he's in like the room with the lawyers and stuff and he's just doing this thing and like, who knows?
But, that would be you. That would 100% be you. Let's be honest.
Maybe. All right. Before we get into some more news, what have you got for us?
Yeah. Well, Chris, verbal warnings and hard speed limiters are on the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's mind for, of course, the U.S. here. Owing to increasingly common and increasingly tragic crashes across the country, they've been drawing attention particularly to cases of gross speeding.
What's gross speeding, I wonder?
It's disgusting. It's gross.
It's gross. It's so
gross. One example pointed out is a crash in Las Vegas 2 years ago involving a 2018 Challenger going through a red light at 103 miles per hour, killing 9 people. That is gross speeding.
That is very gross.
That is terrible. Such severe crashes are unfortunately not uncommon.
Come on. Hold on. I don't believe that. I don't believe that we have a rampant problem with Dodge Challengers running over nine people at a time. I don't believe it.
I don't know. I would have to look the stats. Again, they don't sort.
They don't have
there.
I looked at the stats. They don't have a category for Challengers running over nine people.
Well, probably not specifically. They do have the Mustang category, oddly enough, though. no, but the NTSB and the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, otherwise known as the IIHS,
oh,
has been looking.
What you're
at
telling me
changes.
Is insurance companies are getting their grubby fingers in this? Insurance companies are lobbying
of
for this?
Of course they are, Chris. Oh, they don't have to pay out then.
Okay. So what they want to do is they want to have regulation that reduces the amount of crashes, or they think will reduce the amount of crashes, but then mm-hmm. still charge you the same amount for insurance.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, no, the premiums would not go down.
No, I'm sure they wouldn't. My premiums have done nothing but go up, but that's probably
what is their proposed solution? Well, it's the adoption of intelligent speed assist technology, which is already mandatory, mind you, in the EU. This technology utilizes GPS, cross-referencing with speed limits, and onboard cameras to alert drivers when they're speeding.
That's what we want, isn't it?
Yes. While various versions of this technology already exist, the focus is on encouraging responsible driving. Passive systems rely on visual, sound, or haptic alerts, while active ones, more stringent, make it challenging to exceed the speed limit.
I actually have it's going to basically play a chime when you speed. I have a copy of the chime that they're going to play.
Oh, God.
Okay, you ready?
Let's hear it. I'm ready. What is that from?
You don't know what that's from? It's a Mark II. That's the Mark III Volkswagen. You have your keys in, but you're not buckled up. Chime.
It's so obnoxious. It's so.
some Mark III guy. This is the first thing you do. You reach under the dash, you grab that thing, and you rip it out. Absolutely. This, unfortunately, I don't think you're going to be able to. You're going to be able to do.
Yeah.
Remember when, like, the seatbelt chime, the guys would make the little blank seatbelt thing you would just put in, conveniently would also open a bottle of Bud.
Which always seemed a little odd to me. Like, not only are you not wearing your seatbelt, but you're drinking and driving. That's what your product is encouraging?
Yep.
How come that guy didn't go to jail for 3 years?
Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't.
Maybe.
He didn't. He didn't because it's just imported from AliExpress.
Yes, that's true. No, so like what they're referring it to is like a lot of Audis, your Volkswagen probably too, you can set like a little speed chime reminder in the settings, right?
You know what?
Like
you where that came that. From initially?
Where?
It's for your snow tires. So you can have a speed warning for your snow tires because you're not driving on the Autobahn at 140 miles an hour on snow tires.
That makes sense. But I'm
so it's like a snow tire setting.
They're going to encourage this more, or it's just going to be part of the software that's just going to ding at you regardless. However, the NTSB is not pushing for drastic measures like the electronically restricting vehicles just yet. So it'll just beep at you annoyingly. It won't actually stop.
Did you say just yet?
Just.
Yeah, exactly.
Yet.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
The IIHS's Jessica Ciccino, I think that was probably pretty close, emphasizes the severity of the issue, stating, quote, speeding causes more than a quarter of all crash deaths every year. The NTSB recommends passive ISA systems.
Here. We've been through this before. I know. One thing on this, with the speeding causing more than a quarter of crash deaths every year, that is a lie.
Really?
40% or 37 are drinking. 100%. It's not the speeding. Yeah. It's because you're drunk, okay?
Which I wonder, are you drunk and then you're speeding? In which case, even if that's true, that's not the speeding. It's the fact that you're
drinking.
It's the
fact that you're drunk and speeding. Yeah. It's not the speeding. I can speed all day and be completely safe.
Speaking of which is interesting. So, like, if you have a DUI and you need the ignition interlock, right, where you have to blow in it, mm-hmm. they're also expressing interest in an ISA interlock system for repeat speeding offenders.
Oh,
so
my
just
God.
Like that, if you had a DUI and needed to get your interlock installed in your car, what about if you had repeat speeding tickets?
Your car
now
just
you need the
found
speed
guilty,
monitor.
Your car doesn't start.
Well, no, it's just it will not let you exceed the speed limit then.
Not good, dude.
That's
not
scary.
Good.
In the EU, 21 automakers have agreed on a common ISA map mandated for all new cars in 2024, which means those 21 automakers will not allow the vehicle to go faster than the speed limit in those areas.
Common ISA map.
The road to zero Coalition acknowledges concerns from U.S. drivers about autonomy and emergencies related to these systems. Yeah.
Road, there's just no such thing as zero anything.
I know.
There's no zero anything. This road to zero is this like pipe dream utopian bullshit. It's never going to happen.
No.
Just accept we're humans. We make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Some of us are going to die. If you don't want to die, stay at home on a couch covered in plastic, watch Celebrity Family Feud, and just eat Pringles all day long. Do that.
We do watch Celebrity Family Feud.
It's pretty good. But my couch is not covered in plastic, and I like to speed a little bit. So let people it sucks. Yeah. It sucks.
Well, it's good news, Chris, because they did emphasize the need to balance safety benefits with consumer acceptance.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So they want to see how tight they can squeeze you before you don't accept. And then so it's almost like if you put your belt on too tight, you'd be really tight at first, but then your body would start to it's almost like a woman wearing a corset, right? You wear the corset for long enough, you just have to keep tightening it over and over and over again. Otherwise it just gets loose because your body starts to shift, your organs end up in your neck, all these different things.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, I was going to say, tighten your belt too much, then you just start muffin topping, right?
Exactly. Consumer acceptance will be a moving target at all times. It's just like in New York now. They have, you know about the tax in New York where you're driving, right? Like if you drive in New York, it's $15. You come in, $15. Period.
Really?
Yep, it's $15.
When did this start?
In the last year or two.
Okay.
So it's $15 you come into Manhattan over the bridge.
So is it
come
a
into
toll?
Manhattan. Yeah, it's a toll. So it's $15. Okay. And they have these little cameras set up all over the place. And they said,
what if
we
you
will
live
never
in Manhattan
ever
with a car.
Huh?
What if you live in Manhattan with a car?
Okay, let me
like you
let
don't
me
have
get to
go
that.
Go into Manhattan. Okay.
Right, then you're fine technically. And they said, we will never tax the people in Manhattan on these roads. We'll never do it. And then lo and behold, like a year later, boom, 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 boom. All these cameras went up. Now there's cameras that reads your license plate, sends you a fine, sends you your toll, deducts your account, whatever. They're everywhere. They're all over the place now. And they don't do anything yet. They're just monitoring. But guess what? They're going to turn that shit on because guess what? Consumer acceptance will change. They're going to come up with some way. They're going to change the law. This unintended consequences, slippery slope shit. Look, I'm sure, Matt, you know, if you want to not have congestion in Manhattan, you know what you do? Leave. Just leave. Don't live there. What are you doing living in that shithole? God, it's so disgusting. It smells like shit. There's garbage everywhere. Rats running around. The pizza is not good enough to warrant living there. That's all I can say.
No, probably not.
Tell me about the, hamburger
food.
Tell me about the
hamburger. I want you to research for me while I'm talking about this because there's like a bunch of McDonald's characters, right? And I feel like they were a thing and then they're never talked about or used in advertising at all.
Okay, I'll take a look.
I guess they're coming back because McDonald's Hamburglar is back and upping his game by going on a coast-to-coast road trip in his new Burger Cuda getaway car.
The Burger Cuda getaway car.
The Burger Cuda.
I'm going to pull up some photos.
Which is so cool because it is actually a 1970 Chrysler Cuda, or Plymouth Cuda, rather.
Yeah.
And if you spot the car during his trip and scan the vehicle's code, you'll win a McDonald's gift card and some swag, as the fast food chain announced.
Look at this thing.
It's so rad. It's really cool.
The interior sucks a little bit.
Well, it's McDonald's.
Like, yeah. It's McDonald's. Look at the seats. They look like
It's like the tuck and roll, but it's his.
Look at the cup holders. They got little burger things instead of cup holders.
That's amazing.
This thing is.
The steering wheel. Look at the steering wheel.
It's got McDonald's logo right on it. Yeah, this thing's pretty cool.
Okay, so last year, McDonald's rolled out improvements to their classic burgers to make them tastier than even before.
They taste the same. I don't eat McDonald's very often, but they taste exactly
I didn't know they changed anything.
Yeah.
Again, I just, yeah.
Is it a classic burger just because McDonald's started a long time ago? I would think that this burger tastes nothing like.
Is the classic burger like a line of burgers in the McDonald's menu? Like, is their classic burgers?
Can you imagine a guy like actually making? Did you watch the what's the McDonald's movie?
Super Size Me?
No. It's about the founding McDonald's.
Oh no, I didn't watch any of that. Oh,
the founder
talking about
with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, with the dude, Michael Keaton. Was it good?
It was just ruthless and just like basically stole the business from the original founders. Essentially just like sleaze talked him and just strong armed him into selling him the business. Seemed like kind of a sleazy dude.
Yeah,
but if you look at the in the movie, like back in the day, it was almost like an old school walk up, get some ice cream and get a cheeseburger kind of place, like a drive in.
Right.
You know, is what it was, what it felt like. And I bet those burgers were great. I bet they tasted awesome. And this classic burger probably tastes absolutely
preservatives.
Nothing.
There's like
it's full of, it's like 25% monosodium glutamate, probably.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the burgers are tastier than ever before. That made McDonald's lovers happy. But it also caught the attention, Chris, of the Hamburglar.
Oh, no.
Who returned to his life of burger stealing crime.
So he went into hibernation because the burgers were very good.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. Like, have they not used any of these characters? Like, what was it? Grimace?
You want to see one of them? Here's some of the Hamburglar. There's like a lot.
Right. There's a bunch of them.
There's a lot of them.
Right. Like, there's the Hamburglar.
Dude, he doesn't even have a photo on the McDonald's wiki.
Ooh.
There's Grimace, which is kind of sad because he's just super fat, like glutton.
What is Grimace? Like, are any of these supposed to be
Grimace?
Is
a character featured in McDonaldland commercials. He's Ronald McDonald's best friend. He's a large, purple, rotund being of indeterminate species with short arms and legs. He is known for his slow-witted yet optimistic demeanor. Grimace sometimes goes for long periods of time without speaking. When he does speak, he is known for saying "duh" before every sentence. Yeah, there's Grimace. What else we got here? We've got Birdie. I've seen Birdie. Yeah, there's Mayor McCheese. I never knew what his name was, but this guy was always Mayor McCheese was always creepy in the Playland.
Really?
Yeah, he was.
I've never seen him before in my life.
Yeah, Mayor McCheese. I remember him. Maybe he's
so early Birdie. She must have been like the breakfast menu or something.
Uncle O'Grimacy?
No.
What is this picture? This looks like. Could you imagine seeing this as a child? Look at this thing. This thing is absolutely
nightmare
terrifying.
Fuel.
Nightmare. Yeah,
just
it looks
nightmare
like a
fuel.
Giant extruded turd.
See, that's what I'm talking about. There's all these characters
Okay, hold on. Let's
Okay, what year is this from?
It's not. Let's see.
Here. I'm sure we'll figure it out when you play. I'll say 1982 or something.
Here, a new screen. All right.
Green! Oh, green butterfly. I'm green footprint. Uncle O'Grimacy.
Hello, boys, I'm back, and I'm painting everything green to match the shamrock shake.
Shamrock shakes are back? Yum, let's celebrate at McDonald's.
Shamrock shakes, they're a beautiful green. They're a beautiful green,
they're green,
green.
Shamrock shakes, they're a beautiful green. Uncle.
Wow, okay. Ronald McDonald and Grimace tracked down the shamrock shake. This is like 1970s, wow.
Yeah,
this is a rabbit 80s, hole. This has been a rabbit hole. This has been a rabbit hole. All right, that's enough.
I love this rabbit hole. Okay, but anyways, bottom line, the Hamburglar Watch sweepstakes runs until February 25th.
Did we say what the sweepstakes was?
You look for the CUDA.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be driving around. The Hamburglar's going to be driving around, and you take a picture of him, and you enter the sweepstakes, and you win stuff.
We need him to come on the rally. I want to meet the Hamburglar on the Overcrest rally.
Dude! All right, spothamburglar.com.
All right, email them and see if we can get the dude. If we could get the Hamburglar and the Wienermobile to do a drag race on the Overcrest rally. You know how hard it's got to be to drive as the Hamburglar in the car? In that costume? Can you imagine being in that for like 6 hours? Just like sweating your little Hamburglar nuts off?
Like, is there one Hamburglar that's doing this road trip? Like, is it one guy dressed as him? Or do they have like a fleet of these guys? Are there multiple vehicles?
Could you imagine the smell inside the Hamburglar's outfit? He's only eating McDonald's cheeseburgers. What the inside of that thing smells like. You ever see the guy that only drank cherry or cherry Pepsi or something for like...
No.
Well, it was like holiday spice Pepsi. He drank it for like 2 months straight, and like his skin was starting to fall off, and it hurt to eat all the time.
That's not good.
Jake, tell me about the Drivers Club.
No, I'm looking at this episode. This is super cool.
This episode is not over. It's over for you. Right. If you're not a Drivers Club member, if you're a Drivers Club member, you get to hang out with us for a little bit. We're going to talk about projects. We're going to talk about something that I bought. Talk about my Mercedes. Jake hasn't done anything, so he's not going to have anything to talk about. But
that's
I got lots to talk about.
I got stuck four wheeling on my property.
Oh yeah, that'll be a fun story. But you have to be a member of the Drivers Club to get the exclusive extra content. Does anybody say WWW anymore? Do I sound like a 90-year-old retiree?
Yeah, that's not something you need to say.
Overcastproductions.com/Drivers Club. Hop on over. It's $5. Support the show. Support Overcrest. What do you got there? How to spot it?
It has a hamburger warmer in the center console. I just had to show you this. Look at that.
I love it.
How cool is that?
Is it functional? Because it looks like it would just light the hamburger on fire.
It really does. Yes. So anyways, Drivers Club. No. Overcrestproductions.com/Drivers Club. Yeah.
We will see the rest of you guys next week.